Case number 07-1312, National Cable and Telecommunications Association Petitioner versus Federal Communications Commission et al. Mr. Brill for the petitioner, Ms. Walker for the interveners, Mr. Marcus for the respondents.
Good morning. Morning. May it please the court, Matthew Brill for petitioner NCTA. The FCC's selective opt-in requirement for sharing CP&I with unaffiliated marketing partners does not advance the government's interest in protecting the privacy of that information. Whether analyzed under the First Amendment or under the APA, the order fails to justify imposing special burdens on carriers that choose to market in conjunction with joint venture partners or independent contractors. The FCC's rule is not supported by any evidence, and it doesn't even comport with common sense. The rulemaking below was initiated after some carriers had been unable to safeguard CP&I. In particular, some data brokers were able to gain access to CP&I by posing as customers in a practice known as pretexting. And after several of these incidents, Congress actually criminalized the practice of pretexting, and the FCC responded as well by directly adopting rules that safeguard CP&I. In particular, it required password protection with very stringent aspects of it, so that customers could call and authenticate themselves before a carrier would divulge CP&I. And if the FCC had stopped there, we'd have no quarrel with the order, even though it imposes significant compliance burdens. But unlike those authentication rules and other direct responses, the Commission went one step further and imposed its selective opt-in requirement for sharing with certain entities. And in doing so, it imposed significant burdens on speech without countervailing benefits. The Commission argues at bottom that it's justified in this selective approach because sharing with unaffiliated marketing partners, joint venture partners, and independent contractors poses an increased risk of unauthorized disclosure. But it concedes, as it must, that there's absolutely nothing in the record to support that assertion. As far as the FCC is aware, there has never been a single instance in which a joint venture partner or an independent contractor has divulged CP&I to anyone without authorization. And there's good reason that there's no record support. It doesn't make sense when you think about how these joint venture partners and contractors operate to think that they would pose special risks.
But from the Commission's perspective, isn't the disclosure here from the telecommunications carrier to the joint venture partner? And Section 2222 prohibits use or disclosure without consent. And the Commission is saying that disclosure is a disclosure that requires consent because they're disclosing it to an entity not part of the telecommunications company.
Your Honor, that is their assertion. But right. If you break it down, the Commission's rule belies that claim. The rule allows disclosure to other companies as long as they're affiliated based on opt-out consent. In other words, it deems opt-out consent to be approval for purposes of the statute.
Right.
And so its argument is and must be that the only reason a more speech-restricting form of approval is required is because there's an increased risk when you share with an unaffiliated partner. But it not only doesn't prove that assertion with evidence, but upon examination, that assertion doesn't make sense. Carriers interact with customers every day, and customers call and ask for CP&I. They ask for phone records. They ask why a particular call was charged as it was. And because of those routine interactions, there have been a number of instances where carriers gave out CP&I without proper authorization. But independent contractors and joint venture partners don't interact with customers of the carrier at all.
This is you're making a tailoring argument, right?
Both, Your Honor, that it doesn't directly advance the interest and it's not tailored.
Well, but the problem with not directly advance is that you aren't challenging the statute.
We are not, Your Honor.
Yeah, and so Congress has already made the judgment about use and disclosure of CP&I information, and you're not challenging that.
We are not. We're saying the selective.
In a way, you know, you've kind of conceded the first two central Hudson requirements.
I don't think that's right, Your Honor.
You aren't challenging the statute.
No, but we're saying the Commission's own implementation of that statute doesn't advance the governmental interest. That the privacy interest here is defined as preventing unauthorized disclosures or, as the FCC would have it, informed consent to riskier sharing.
That's why I asked you the question about tailoring, because it sounds to me like you're making a tailoring argument. You're saying the Commission could have done this in a less restrictive way.
Well, Your Honor, I think
isn't that right?
I think, Your Honor, that in the Fox case, the third and fourth prongs of the Central Hudson test do merge a little bit in terms of the adequacy of the fit, whether something directly advances the interest. Overlaps substantially with the question of whether it's the it restricts more speech than necessary.
Under Fox, it doesn't have to be an exact fit.
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. But there needs to be some fit that has some logical basis, even under the more deferential standards of the APA. And here the Commission tries to say that there's a logical basis for this selective approach because maybe it makes sense to have fewer companies possess CP&I or fewer employees.
Right, right.
But there is no logic to that.
Fox, was there any evidence that that there had been any fraud or violence or anything untoward as a result of Tupperware parties on campus?
No, Your Honor.
There was no evidence, right. It was a predictive judgment that the authorities made that we just don't want this kind of commercial activity going on in an educational environment, because of problems of security and so on and so forth. And maybe it was overbroad, and maybe it went too far, and maybe there didn't have to be a full ban. Maybe each organization that came on campus could be screened. But you know, Justice Scalia, in that opinion, says that we don't require that kind of exactitude. Now, I don't see what the difference is between that and this.
If this were the kind of case where the FCC were making a predictive judgment and adopting a prophylactic rule, it would be entitled to deference unless its rule could be shown to be irrational. And we think it is irrational. But here, it's not saying that we're making a guess about the harms that could occur. It's looking back over a five-year period where opt-out was the regime, and it's saying in reaction to concrete problems in the record, we're changing course and we're adopting opt-in only for unaffiliated marketing partners.
This is your APA argument.
Well, it's both, Your Honor, because under the First Amendment as well, you can't draw irrational distinctions. In Cincinnati versus Discovery Network, the court found that news racks of containing commercial handbills couldn't be distinguished from news racks with non-commercial handbills because they posed the same kind of harm. And our argument here is the same. In Denver area, it was the same kind of argument, that one kind of cable channel had proven effective to protect parents from indecent contact with an opt-out regime, with parental controls. And the FCC presumed that there was greater harm to children and families with least access and public access channels. And the court said, but there was no rationale to draw that distinction and require opt-in. This court's decision in Time Warner Entertainment is to the same effect.
The fit between the Denver case and this case is there's no fit. And what the court was talking about in the Denver case was the First Amendment rights of the parents. And you're not talking about the First Amendment rights of customers here.
Well, we're talking about both, Your Honor.
And I don't know that you have standing to talk about. In the Denver case, it was a group of individuals who wanted to watch the porn on the least access channels that brought the suit. They had an odd title. It was Action for Children's Television. They were the ones. But anyway, it was the burden imposed upon them that the Supreme Court said was too extreme, that they had to tell their cable operator, we really want to see this stuff. And that was a burden on their First Amendment rights. I don't see a parallel between that case and this one at all.
Well, Your Honor, to return to the government's asserted basis for finding an increased risk, we think they break down under even a casual examination. The government suggests that sharing CP&I with unaffiliated marketing partners will lead to sharing with more companies, and information in the hands of more companies makes it axiomatic that there's more risk. But the rule doesn't operate that way at all. A small carrier might choose to market in conjunction with a single independent contractor or a single joint venture partner because it doesn't have the resources in-house. And in that case, under this rule, it's subject to the more stringent opt-in approval requirement. Yet another carrier may choose to share information in-house with 1,000 different employees, if it's AT&T, or with 10 different marketing affiliates, and yet in that case it's subject to opt-out approval. So whether it's the APA's basic requirement of a rational nexus or the tailoring or the direct advancement test under the First Amendment, this requirement simply doesn't assert any serve any asserted interest.
I guess I still haven't heard a convincing response to what I think is the obvious fact that there's a difference between under the statute between the company using it themselves and disclosing it to another company.
Well, you're
right. Why isn't that just an obvious distinction?
Well, because I don't think that's actually a correct characterization of this regime. The 2002 order that the FCC adopted strictly distinguished between sharing CP&I with unrelated entities, selling CP&I in the same manner that that this court's opinion in TransUnion addressed in the sale of credit reports. And what the 2002 decision said was, we will require opt-in consent for sales to medical companies or others that want to buy this CP&I for unrelated purposes, because A, customers don't expect that kind of sharing outside of the communications arena, and B, they're subject to greater harm. But the commission in paragraph 36 of the 2002 order expressly distinguished TransUnion on the ground that what its opt-out regime did was quite different and quite limited. It said that you can share CP&I with a joint venture partner or market partner only to market the carrier's own services, that and only to the extent they're communications related. So it isn't any different from sharing with an affiliate. It's just a decision whether the partner you're sharing with happens to have the sufficient degree of common ownership or not.
Right.
And that common ownership threshold is a mere 10%.
Right.
So what the commission is saying is somehow, if I as a carrier want to...
But you got to draw the line somewhere.
Well, you do, Your Honor.
That's where the commission has drawn the line. And
you do, Your Honor, but that line has to be...
either arbitrary or how it presents a First Amendment problem, particularly in view of TransUnion.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, in TransUnion, what would be analogous is if the government had said the permissible kind of sharing in that case was the sale of credit reports for pre-screening, and the court distinguished and said there was a different privacy interest at stake because Congress determined that pre-screening posed less of a risk and was consistent with consumer expectations. But if the government had said we will allow pre-screening sales to one class of entities, one class of banks, but arbitrarily we're going to distinguish another class of banks.
But you've inserted the word arbitrarily, and I mean that states the conclusion. I'm not sure that the distinction the commission has drawn is arbitrary.
Well, I think the test for arbitrariness, Judge Tatel, ultimately comes down to evidence. And the commission asserts that there is a greater risk inherently with these entities simply because they're not under common ownership.
Right.
That ignores several key facts. It ignores the fact that under its own organic statute, Section 217, makes these unaffiliated parties liable to the same degree as the carriers themselves. It also ignores the fact that there is no reason to think that they would somehow be less secure. In fact, the contractual safeguards that apply to independent contractors and to joint venture partners impose a much stricter duty than exists with affiliates. Affiliates aren't under the same kind of formal duties at all.
Is the arbitrary, maybe I'm operating under a misunderstanding, is your claim of arbitrariness, does it go to the fact that the commission decided opt-in as opposed to opt-out?
I think at its core, Your Honor, it's that the commission has conceded that opt-out is an effective form of approval for certain disclosures of CP&I, in particular disclosures within the carrier to its own employees, outside of the carrier to other companies, provided they meet the affiliation standard. So once the commission has conceded that it's appropriate and consistent with consumer expectations to share that information outside of the carrier, it has to have a reason to distinguish sharing with entities that happen not to be affiliated.
It has to have a reason that's not arbitrary or capricious.
Yes, Your Honor.
And its reason is that it presents a greater risk to transfer to entities.
That is indeed the reason, Your Honor, but we submit again that there's no basis for that assertion. It's simply a speculative assertion, and this Court's cases, whether under the First Amendment or the APA, say that that kind of conclusory assertion does not do in establishing
a
rational basis.
So your argument is it should have been opt-in for everybody.
Well, Your Honor,
you have two arguments. You have APA and First Amendment, right?
We do have two.
Okay, and TransUnion says that, quoting, intermediate scrutiny does not obligate courts to invalidate a remedial scheme because some alternative solution is marginally less intrusive. And I don't see why that doesn't resolve this case. You're arguing that opt-out would be less intrusive.
Well, Your Honor, even under the APA, this Court's decision in
What about the First Amendment?
Well, under the First Amendment, the Court has made clear that even if you could restrict more speech, as the Court said in Cincinnati and the Metro Media case involving billboards, it isn't an answer to adopt an irrational scheme that selectively bans speech.
You've substituted now for arbitrary, irrational.
Well, Your Honor, let me take Rubin versus Coors. The Court said even assuming that you could limit the disclosures of alcohol content across the board in beer labels and in beer advertisements, what you can't do is limit it to beer labels while permitting it for beer ads unless there was a good reason to distinguish between the two. I'll try to avoid the conclusion arbitrary and irrational, but I think it defines irrationality and arbitrariness, because if you distinguish without a basis, that is arbitrary. And this Court's decision in National Fuel Gas, even without getting into the First Amendment, was quite similar. The government, FERC, tried to limit the sharing of information with one set of pipeline affiliates based on harm that allegedly occurred in connection with a different set of pipeline affiliates, marketing versus non-marketing affiliates. And the Court said the mere possibility of harm and the mere supposition of harm wasn't enough to satisfy even the deferential standard.
Opt in, opt out. I mean, it seems to me a very basic, easy to understand distinction between the two, and the choices are pretty clear. One assumes that a customer acquiesces, silently agrees to have the information that relating to that customer shared with others. That's opt. And unless the customer says otherwise, we're going to assume that it's okay. And the other one says we're going to assume that the customer does not want the information shared unless the customer affirmatively agrees, right? The commission makes a judgment between the two. Maybe opt out was not arbitrary, but it doesn't necessarily mean that opt in, therefore, is arbitrary. It seems to me that it's well supported by simply common sense.
Well, Your Honor, the Court has said time and again where, in this case, putting the burden of consumer apathy on the carrier to obtain that approval unquestionably restricts speech more than the opt-out approach, because the default is to not allow speech.
Right, and TransUnion, in the cases it cites, says that's not dispositive in intermediate scrutiny.
But the key difference with TransUnion, Your Honor, is that Congress found that any sharing of credit information was harmful to consumers.
Well, Congress has found here that any sharing of this information without consent is harmful.
Well, but Your Honor, the key is that the commission has
Isn't that correct?
That is correct, but the commission has dispositively found that opt-out is effective consent for the significant majority of instances where information is disclosed to another entity. And so again, if it's going to distinguish this one narrow category of unaffiliated marketing partners, it does so solely on the basis of asserting that they pose an increased risk.
Let go by the statement that you made in response to my question. You said that the Supreme Court has repeatedly held that putting that burden on the carrier to obtain the approval is unconstitutional?
Your Honor, I didn't mean to phrase it that specifically.
I think that's what you said.
The Court has...
Because I don't know. What case are you talking about?
Well, I meant to say, Your Honor, that the Court has repeatedly said that irrational distinctions burden speech more than necessary.
Putting the burden on the consumer, if we draw the analogy between Denver and Playboy in the other case, putting the burden on the consumer might be unconstitutional. But if that's true, then we need consumers in front of us, and we don't have those people. Their First Amendment rights are not being represented in this litigation, so far as I can tell.
Right, Your Honor. We do think it burdens consumers because it'll lead to broader advertising campaigns and not the targeted campaigns they may prefer. But our key point is simply that if the government is going to concede that sharing CP&I with other entities serves consumers' expectations, what it said in the 2002 order is that consumers want and expect targeted marketing based on CP&I. They just want it limited to the communications services environment, which is why it prohibited, unless it was opt-in consent, other forms of sharing unrelated services. That's what distinguishes TransUnion, because the harm there was the very speech itself. Congress said any disclosure outside of pre-screening was substantively unlawful. The government here is agreeing with us that targeted marketing is a good thing.
I thought in TransUnion any disclosure would be okay with express permission.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You said that Why isn't that the same as this case? I don't get it.
Because the opt-out form of approval unquestionably burdens less speech, and the government does have some leeway in imposing a greater restriction if it has a reason to do so. But again, without pointing to anything in the record that suggests that this kind of sharing with unaffiliated partners in fact causes more disclosures without authorization, the government doesn't have a basis. As the court said in Time Warner Entertainment, if the government's hypothesis were logical,
the commission has to wait until there's evidence of people's privacy being violated.
No, it has to
before
wait.
Before it can act?
I think it's fair to say.
There's no case that says that. Certainly the First Amendment doesn't require that.
I think it's fair
to say. The
commission
is saying that it wants to act prophylactically here. The risk is greater when the information is transferred to a non-affiliated partner than not.
The way this court has framed the test in, for example, Association versus of Battery Recyclers is that the harm either has to have happened or be likely to happen. And the government hasn't shown that unaffiliated marketing partners are any more likely than affiliated marketing partners to disclose without authorization. Thank you, Your Honors.
I'll give you some time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Helgi Walker for Interveners Verizon and Quest. I will try to be brief in light of the time. We'd like to stress the APA alternative grounds for resolution in this case. Such an approach would entirely dispose of the controversy before you, and it is, of course, the narrower ground presented here. Such an approach would be consistent with the Ashwander rule, which teaches that federal courts not reach constitutional questions unnecessarily. Such an approach would also avoid any possible tension with either the Tenth Circuit's opinion in U.S. West on the one hand or your own line of cases in the TransUnion matters on the other. Turning to the merits of the APA.
Where's the tension with TransUnion?
Well, if you were to rule for a petitioner on the First Amendment, you might have to TransUnion.
Not if we rule the other way.
Right.
We wouldn't have any tension, would we?
Right. Well, I think it's natural to take up the narrower ground first.
I agree with that.
First.
That's a good point.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
Yes. And on that point, on the question of the APA, we would like to stress the absence of any record evidence whatsoever to show the existence of any problem to be remedied here with regard to third-party marketers in the first place. And on this issue, Your Honors, we think National Fuel is directly controlling. There, Judge Kavanaugh, writing for the court, had facts before him that were much like this. There, the order on review contained not a single example of abuse by the objects of the order, non-marketing affiliates of gas companies. This court disallowed FERC from relying on a record of abuse by marketing affiliates to show the existence of a problem with respect to non-marketing affiliates. So too here, under the threshold evidentiary APA question, the commission cannot rely on evidence of a problem with respect to disclosure by carriers, which is all it cites in paragraph 39 of its order, to justify regulation of third-party marketers. You asked Judge Tatel whether they were relying the agency on their predictive judgment to adopt a prophylactic rule.
What about paragraph 46 of its order?
In 46, the commission admits we have no evidence and then says this doesn't mean that disclosure is not happening by third-party marketers. That is startlingly like the rationale FERC gave in its brief in the National Fuel case.
No, but here in the paragraph 46, the commission says, well, this rule is designed to curtail all forms of unauthorized disclosure, and then talks about computer intrusion and disclosures by insiders.
We think that's inconsistent with the full record here. The EPIC petition, the NPRM, and paragraphs 1 and 2 of the order frame this rulemaking as a direct response, and that's a quote from paragraph 1, to the practice of pretexting and data brokers. But, Judge Tatel, I wanted to get back to your point. The commission did not purport to rely on its predictive judgment. The commission
relied on the distinction between affiliated companies that are owned and companies that are not.
In addressing the argument.
And it's under a statutory directive from Congress.
But on the evidentiary question, Judge Tatel, the commission responded to our claim below that there was no evidence of a problem to be remedied here by saying the reality is this information is being disseminated, but they cited back only to paragraph 12 and accompanying notes, which is all evidence about carriers. And National Fuel explains that where the agency stakes its rationale, at least in part, on a claimed record of abuse, but that record is non-existent, the rule must be struck under Chenery. We think National Fuel is directly controlling. Cases like HBO and Edison Electric also find a complete lack of evidence of an actual problem where the agency claims that that's what it's doing. National Fuel was careful to say that an agency can adopt a prophylactic rule based on predictive judgment where that is what they are claiming. But I think a careful study of the order shows the FCC asserted the existence of a current problem, and to show that problem, they relied only and exclusively on disclosure by carriers. That is insufficient under National Fuel.
What about, again, I'm still back on paragraph 46, statement about, we see no reason why joint venture partners and independent contractors would be immune.
That is the sort of negative reasoning that the court rejected in National Fuel. FERC said it had no evidence of abuse by non-marketing affiliates, and I think the language was almost the same, Judge Rogers. FERC said that doesn't mean that the abuse is not happening. The court in National Fuel rejected that sort of negative logic as a truism that cannot be the basis for administrative action. If you compare that sentence from National Fuel to the commission sentence that just because we don't have evidence doesn't mean this isn't happening, I think those two line up very neatly. And another point on predictive judgment, Judge Tatel, if I might. You wrote for this court in the Safe Extensions case, 509 F3rd 593, that the predictive judgment rationale does not apply to empirical facts, declarations of facts by agencies that are capable of proof. That was based on McDonnell Douglas's footnote 4. What we have here is the agency's declaration of fact.
Yeah, but that was a very different situation. That was a case where you had two different technologies, both in use, and the agency was treating them differently.
True,
and
but
there was clear evidence that was ascertainable about how the two types of runway lights were working. You don't have that here.
Well, the agency claimed there was a problem with the one kind of runway light, but you faulted them for not showing one piece of evidence that it was an actual problem in the field. And you were careful to explain, and we think this is important, that predictive judgment applies in areas where there really is factual uncertainty. But predictive judgment doesn't apply when the agency claims a fact, something that is capable of proof, but then comes up with nothing to show that the fact exists. National Fuel was very clear about that, that to claim the existence of a problem and the need to regulate based on the present existence of a problem, but then to come up with nothing to show that in fact the problem exists, is not reasoned decision making.
Let me ask you a question about your brief, okay? On page 18, do you have it?
I don't have it, but
I mean, you're way over time, but I can't resist commenting on this. You say, as courts have repeatedly explained, opt-in rules constitute a severe impairment on First Amendment rights and therefore are highly problematic. And I must say that the citation that you gave for that really just leaped off the page when I read it. There are two problems with it. Number one, you've quoted from a portion of an opinion that's not a majority opinion. Pico, there are only three justices joined in that statement. And the second thing is, I can't for the life of me imagine how that case, even if it had been a majority opinion, which it's not, which dealt with what books should be placed in a school library, has anything to do with this case. Can you tell me?
I think the broad proposition was that the customers who have an interest in hearing certain information have a First Amendment interest here as well. You've touched on
that. Well, the First Amendment interest is the marketing that they would receive. Is that it?
Well, it is certainly not the primary point of our brief, but the point is some customers like to hear information about special deals, special prices for them. They may prefer to receive that. They might want to receive that as opposed to broad-based marketing. The U.S. West case, I think, also makes the general point. So for these reasons, Your Honor, we would urge resolution of this case on the narrow APA ground, the national fuel ground, supported by HBO, Edison Electric, that there's no record evidence whatsoever to support the commission's rule in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Joel Marcus for the FCC in the United States. I'll take up Ms. Walker's suggestion that this is best suited as an APA case. I think, Judge Tatel, you're correct that TransUnion pretty much disposes of the First Amendment questions here, and what's left is just a sort of garden variety administrative law question. We know for a fact that data security is breached regularly. The National Association of Attorneys General
Could you just respond to that, just before you get into
sure.
the very specific point she just made, that in its order, the commission, in support of its claim that there was a problem, relied only on evidence regarding carriers?
Well, it's true that the specific instances of the security problems in CPNI data have been limited to carriers. There are no reported incidences that we know of where third parties outside of the carriers had breached the security of the data. I think what's going on here, and as Judge Rogers pointed out, is that the commission was saying if the carriers are having trouble keeping their hands on this data, if laptops are being lost, if data disks are being misplaced, if computer systems are being hacked into, if insiders are wrongfully disclosing information, It's, I think, a matter of simple common sense to say that other companies who also hold the same data would be subject to the same types of security limitations and breaches that, I'm sorry to say, plague all systems, all computer systems, all human systems, where people are, you know, carrying stuff around in their briefcases home from work and what have you. And so I think that what that shows is that even though we can't point to a specific instance where joint venture partner X or independent marketer Y actually breached the security of data, that the commission was on very firm ground in deciding that that could very well happen. And I think that it would be a highly unwise policy for the court to say that the commission could not actually take steps to prevent
the
goal, kind of thing.
The goal of the statute is to protect the privacy of the consumers.
Absolutely.
And what is privacy in this context?
Privacy in this context is the consumer's control over his own information.
Privacy and generally is, you know, being
not
alone,
letting other people know.
But it's also keeping information to yourself.
Absolutely.
Not sharing it with the world.
Absolutely. And that's,
so if the commission then says, well, okay, we're not going to allow you to carrier, we're not going to allow you to share this with the world,
absolutely,
or with anybody in the world without the approval of the consumer, then what's so it, you know, we need evidence for that?
Okay. Amen to you, Judge Randolph. You know, you know, I don't think so. I think that the whole point of this statute is that people should be able to control the disposition of their own data. You know, I think that
it's just a straight statutory question. The statute says, 222 says you cannot use or disclose, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so the company itself is using it, it and its affiliate, right?
Correct.
But yet, when it gives it to a joint partner, it's disclosing it.
That's correct.
Okay, so why isn't that the end of the case?
Oh, it certainly could be. We have the authority to govern the use or the disclosure.
Disclosure,
I think
the disclosure, because it's disclosure to an outside entity, requires a little more protection than use.
I believe that, I mean, the statute doesn't command that necessarily, but it's certainly a permissible construction of the statute. And in fact, a lot of this, Judge Tatel, turns on the expectations of consumers, and the commission did have a record before it at the time of the 2002 order that showed that something like 73% of all the people who were polled in this survey actually felt that their data should never be disclosed outside of the carrier's own premises. In other words, there was particular sensitivity about the disclosure to third parties. And the number was high. It was really, really high, 73%. That's almost
three
out of four people.
That argument, the argument you're making, and as I read the commission and the paragraph that Judge Rogers pointed out, it goes one step further, but the argument doesn't depend on whether the information is misused
Oh, no.
By joint venture.
It's not just, at all. It's just the disclosure
itself.
I have itself.
This private information, and maybe you're the greatest person in the world, and you're upright, and you're honest, and so on and so forth. I'm not going to share it with you.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. The commission has decided to balance some of those factors for the carrier's own use of the information. There was that total service approach rule where the carrier didn't need to get any consent for certain uses of information, but that's exactly what's going on here. Congress made this determination, and Congress said that there's effectively a right that granted individual consumers a right to control the disposition of their own information. And opt in, opt out, sure, there's some questions, some balances to be drawn, some public policy formulations to be made, but those are all well within the discretion of the commission here. And I think I'm totally on the same page with you, Judge Randolph, and I think the rest of the court, that that the commission is fully entitled to draw these lines, to make these judgments, and to strike policy balances.
What would you say about National Fuel?
I think National Fuel is fundamentally different here, because there the difference between the marketing affiliates and the non-marketing affiliates is that the two of them had nothing to do with each other. They weren't engaged in the same types of activities. They weren't doing the same thing. And so the court found that it was improper to assume that the same abuse that would happen in one area would happen in the other area. This case is fundamentally different, Judge Rogers, because here all these companies have access to this data. They're all in the same boat. They all can be the source of a security breach, and as Judge Randolph has pointed out, they all are governed by the exact same statute, which gives the individual consumers the right to approve or not approve of the use of the data. And so National Fuel, a perfectly good decision on its own merits, has really no bearing here because the situations are fundamentally different. Unless the court has further questions, I really think there's not much more for me to say. I think that the commission has drawn reasonable lines. The commission is not required to wait until the horse has left the barn before it can close the gate. And the predictive judgments that we have relied on here are quite solid and indeed, fairly obvious applications of a statute that the petitioners don't even challenge here. Congress has done much of the hard work in this case, as Judge Tatel pointed out during the petitioner's argument, and we submit that the court should simply affirm us on all grounds here.
Thank you. Mr. Brill? We'll give you 3 minutes, Mr. Brill.
Thank you, Your Honor. By its own terms, the government's argument is that at most, unaffiliated marketing partners are subject to the same risks, not greater risks. It does stand to reason that they could be subject to the same risks, but the commission hasn't sought to extend the same rule. It sought to extend a stricter rule.
The risk of what?
Of unauthorized disclosures.
I don't understand that, because if the statute as interpreted by the commission says that the information cannot be given to joint ventures and contractors, and that's an unauthorized disclosure if the carrier gives it to them, right?
Your Honor, but it's not unauthorized if the commission deems opt-out consent to be effective consent, which it has done here in the case of affiliates.
That's because the affiliates is treated, they treat the affiliates as a use, and the transfer to the joint partner as a disclosure.
Well, that's not what they've said, Your Honor. What they've said is that it's because affiliates empirically pose a greater risk, but then as my co-counsel points out, in failing to meet the standard of National Fuel, they don't prove up the empirical assertion. And I would submit that the substantiality of this informed...
Why isn't the harm that's being prevented... I'm sorry to cut you off and try to remember what you were going to say, but why isn't the harm that's being prevented the sharing of my personal data with somebody outside of the company that I'm dealing with?
Because the government says that the harm there is that the consumer hasn't knowingly consented to an increased risk, not to a risk, a baseline risk that's the same as the
carrier. Somebody else is seeing my personal data.
But that happens every day, Your Honor, within the carrier, within its affiliates, and the government again says...
Congress has passed a statute that gives me as a consumer a right to to have some control over my over who gets to see my data that this carrier has, right?
That's right, Your Honor, and the Commission has conclusively held that opt-out consent is giving you that control by giving you a right to opt out of any sharing. And when we look at informed consent in other contexts, the goal isn't to give the consumer information for its own sake, but to prevent some harm that flows from it. If you look at informed consent in the medical
The Commission says we've had a sea change here. The world has changed. The economic incentives have changed, et cetera, for accessing this data.
Your Honor, and that's simply untrue as far as this record shows. What they've said, counsel referred to laptops being lost and hackers. What he neglected to point out is that there's no evidence that any of that has ever happened, even with respect to carriers. And they've got to go one step further and show that there's a greater risk of it happening with respect to unaffiliated partners.
The problem with your argument, I think, is that you aren't challenging the statute. And the statute doesn't turn on abuse. The statute simply says that the carrier can only use or disclose with consent. That's the end of that. I mean, Congress has decided that. You aren't arguing that Congress didn't have sufficient evidence to support that requirement. The agency is now implementing that requirement. It doesn't need additional evidence. In order for it to enforce a statute that requires it to ensure that carriers not use or disclose information without consent, it doesn't need additional evidence of abuse.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that once the Commission deems consent to be effective based on opt-out consent, which it has indisputably done here, and then it makes an empirical assertion that there's a greater risk, as a matter of fact, when that information is shared with a different kind of entity, under National Fuel or any of this court's APA cases, it simply can't rely on common sense, particularly mm-hmm. where there's speech at issue.
Well, yeah, there's speech interests on both sides, though, isn't there? I mean, you make a powerful argument that you're engaging in the freedom of speech by sharing this information. The Tenth Circuit agreed with you. But then there's also an aspect of the First Amendment the Supreme Court has recognized, which is the right not to speak. And for the consumers who don't want their information shared, the fact that that they are exercising the freedom of speech, which is the right not to speak. So there's First Amendment interest on both sides of this equation.
Well, under opt-out, Your Honor, they can opt out anytime they want. They can direct carriers not to share this information. It isn't a free-for-all. It's quite limited to those consumers who haven't opted out and to the marketing of communications-related services, not mm-hmm. just any services.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Give the intervener 1 minute, okay? Unless you don't want it.
The one point I would like to make, and thank you for the extra minute, is that under these APA cases, we have pointed out common sense is respectfully, Your Honors, not record evidence. The test is substantial record evidence.
That's a great rule, isn't it? I mean,
it's a great rule.
Government can't act on the basis of common sense.
Well, it is the D.C. Circuit's rule, Your Honor, is all I can say. And it helps us. It applies, I think, with force in this case. And I do think that...
Who wrote that?
Yes.
Well, in Edison Electric, you said that speculative factual assertions...
Well, but that's different from common sense.
Well, what the agency has claimed is that this is happening. Yeah. This is happening in the third-party context.
Imagine the headline in the paper. Court rules that government can't act on the basis of common sense.
Well, Judge Tatel, in all seriousness, this is an important point. Mm-hmm. And what the court has explained, they have made a distinction between predictive judgments that, of course, agencies can make, but declarations of fact, things that are susceptible of empirical proof, they cannot simply predict. They have to show it with evidence. And we think it is very clear that the question whether disclosure is happening on the third-party marketer's side is a question of fact susceptible of empirical proof, no less, Your Honor, than the question whether disclosure was happening on the carrier side was susceptible of proof. The agency showed that in paragraph 12 and the accompanying notes as to carriers. When it came to third-party marketers, they had nothing on their own admission.
Given the plain language of 222,
yes,
could the Commission have simply issued a rule saying we interpret use and disclosure to require opt-out for the company and its affiliates and opt in for disclosures to third parties. End of case. No evidence of abuse, nothing. Congress has already passed the law and imposed the burden on the commission to do this.
Well, I think
Why would it need any evidence at all?
Well, because they adopted a special rule for third-party marketers,
saying,
and they have to justify that.
Saying the difference is that they're not owned by the carrier.
Well, that...
It's a disclosure as opposed to a use.
Well, we have to take this case against the backdrop of U.S. West, Your Honors, and of course, there's a possibility for tension in that direction as well.
Maybe U.S. West was wrong.
Well, that is why we are suggesting the APA is perhaps the cleaner route to go here, and that
even with APA, I don't understand why my hypothetical regulation would have any APA problems at all.
Well, I think the agency has to justify this opt-in rule for third-party marketers, and to justify a departure from the scheme that is constitutional, an opt-out scheme, they have to show a special reason to burden more speech.
Yeah, they're not owned by the carrier.
Well, affiliates and agents, although we support that rule and want to emphasize it's not on appeal here, affiliates and agents have just a 10% interest. I think it breaks down a little bit.
That's a substantial difference between affiliates and non-affiliated joint partners.
Well, I think we have to take the rule as it comes, and it's a selective rule on this particular class of entities. And where the agency claims a record of abuse and claims it's regulating on the basis of that, not on the basis of a prophylactic rule, not on the basis of a predictive judgment, but that record breaks down, the court has no choice but to invalidate the rule. We think National Fuel is very clear in all respects.
Is there a difference because this is... has the indicia of an interpretive rule interpreting Section 222?
Which certainly implements, Your Honor, 222, and we wouldn't say that the Commission doesn't have reasonable discretion to decide.
It's Chevron deference on its interpretation that implementing the statute, that a proper way to implement it is an opt-in regime.
We've not raised a statutory claim here. It's really an APA claim that choosing opt-in for this one class of entities was unsubstantiated by the evidence and taken against the backdrop of U.S. West is highly problematic on speech reasons. But if I could just emphasize in closing that your cases clearly show that common sense is just not enough when the agency is purporting to declare a fact. They declared very clearly, the reality is, that's their word, the reality. I take that to mean this is a real problem, not a future problem. The reality is, this is being disseminated, this is happening. But they came up with nothing, absolutely nothing, on third-party marketers by their own admission. Their only response to that in paragraph 46 was, that doesn't mean it's happening. I respectfully ask that you go back to National Fuel. That is exactly what FERC said, and that is exactly what this court rejected as inadequate under the evidence test.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.